Hello and welcome to another episode of The Song of the Mountain, a podcast where we talk about the deep and profound ways that stories impact us and the kind of lives that those stories might be calling us to live. Today, you're going to hear a little bit about me, my life, my journey, and how the principles we talk about with story kind of emerged in my life. And I have a very special guest that is here to interview me. Stay tuned. So today, my special guest is my six-year-old son, who's going to interview me. Liam, could you say hello?
Hello.
That's my son, Liam. Liam, how old are you?
I am six.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and start.
Daddy, tell me about yourself.
Well, for most of my life, I was a classical musician. I started off as a trumpet player, but soon became a conductor and was totally obsessed with both of them. I practiced like 8 hours a day, studied nonstop. I kind of had a very obsessive, like workaholic sort of thing going on. I still sort of am suffering from that. But regardless, it was something that really deeply impacted me and was a huge part of my life really as a teenager on through most of my adulthood.
What drew you to classical music?
What a good question, Liam. Well, I think it was how classical music transported me out of the world I'm in into a world full of this wonder and delight. There's just something magical about classical music that's really hard to put your finger on, really hard to describe. But when I listen to a piece of music, it just has this power to create this transcendent kind of experience for me. I still remember sitting on my bed as a teenager, looking up at the ceiling at night, listening to Mahler's First Symphony. And if you've ever heard it, it starts with this very ominous, mysterious note that emerges from the string section. You immediately feel like you're in this smoky, hazy place. And then eventually these notes start to emerge from the woodwinds. You don't really know where you are harmonically. You don't know what key we're in, really. And I remember that opening just making me feel like I was in this other world. And that's why I loved classical music. This ethereal, otherworldly quality that it brought out. So I think that was one quality that really drew me to classical music. The other one was I loved making music with people. You know, there was just this amazing experience of doing that thing with others that made me feel connected to them in a way that I often didn't outside of that. Sitting with a bunch of other people, I remember, for example, a lot of my experiences in all-state orchestras and bands. All the people who came from all over the state to audition, and then they pick like the top people. So everybody's really talented and invested. And you have this amazing, inspiring conductor who comes in and tries to create this musical experience for people. And that's in some ways why I became a conductor, because I loved the conductors I had. They were so inspiring, and I saw how they really shaped the experience. It's one of the reasons why I have that kind of weird, cheeky title, The Experience Wizard, on my website, because that's kind of what I was doing as a conductor. And what I still like doing today is creating and architecting these experiences that help people connect with the transcendent in a way.
Are you still a conductor?
No, I left that world a long time ago in some ways. In some ways, I've never left it, but no, I'm not a conductor anymore. I left that world for a couple of reasons. The big reason was I just couldn't find a job. I applied for many, many jobs and just couldn't make a lot of headway and wasn't sure why. And I think one of the reasons is that I was always trying to disrupt things as a conductor in a way that people in classical music just did not like. I'm sort of fundamentally wired to go into situations and environments or systems that that maybe aren't working in certain ways that need to be changed and disrupted, like in classical music. So classical music, it's been done the same way for hundreds of years. The way we do the concert experience is pretty much the same all the time. And I kept wanting to go in and say, hey, why is the audience so detached from the orchestra, physically speaking? They're sort of looking into the orchestra like this snow globe, and they're not really a part of the action. How do we do that differently? Or why do musicians not have really any creative agency in an orchestra? I experience this kind of learned helplessness where musicians just look to the conductor, look to the printed score as this kind of Bible that they have to follow to the letter. And I kept wanting to break them out of that. And that didn't go over very well. So I think one of the reasons why either I didn't find a job or that I didn't really like it in some ways is I was trying to be a disruptor, and that just didn't fit with the world I was trying to make headway in.
Where do you see this disruptor coming out in the stories you love?
Liam, what an amazing question. How did you think that one up? Well, I've always loved movies that turn things upside down, that really challenge your way of thinking about the world and about your life. So, for example, one of my favorite movies as a teenager was The Matrix.
You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life, that there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there, like a splinter in your mind, driving you mad.
I remember when I saw that scene, and even still when I see it, that scene with Morpheus and Neo sitting there talking to each other, something in me is like trying to come out. Something in me leaps out of my insides and goes, oh my gosh, that's it. Like, I want to be Morpheus. In some ways, like there's something in me that wants to be that person that helps people see that life isn't maybe what they thought it was, that maybe there's another way of seeing their lives that they haven't considered before. And in general, I've really always loved mind-bendy sort of movies. So Inception was another one, the idea that you could go into people's dreams and implant ideas, stories, and suggestions through this kind of strange dream technology. And so you can see right away this very obvious connection between who I am and the person trying to emerge in my real life and the types of movies I'm drawn to.
What other kinds of stories do you love?
Well, aside from the mind-bendy stories that I already talked about, I've always been drawn to the fantasy genre. I've rarely enjoyed a film or a book or a video game, all the different ways I like stories, that doesn't have some kind of magical element to it. So I loved Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, Harry Potter, The Sandman, any show really that has some fantasy element to it. I think the reason why I've always been drawn to those stories is there's this, again, it is that supernatural, mysterious element to them. I don't like stories that just explain everything. There's something in me that wants mystery, that craves mystery. And in some ways, it's because I live in a world and in a culture that has largely taken away mystery, taken away things that we don't understand or that are transcendent. And there's just something I don't like about that.
Where do you see these fantasy stories coming out in your life?
Again, another incredibly astute question, Liam. Well, when I look at those fantasy stories in particular, I laugh because I look at my career as a conductor and I'm like, oh my gosh, you literally chose a career where you wave a magic wand around and make music. This kind of, like I described before, this kind of magical experience. And so again, you see kind of Jesse the magician, Jesse the spell weaver kind of coming out. And it might sound totally weird, and we'll talk about this in another episode, where about spells and really how they're all around us all the time. They're not actually fake. We just haven't learned to recognize them in our normal lives. And so I actually think of some of the stuff I do as like weaving spells that are designed to break a modern enchantment, that there's nothing more to us and the world we live in than cells and atoms. And that all of the mythic stuff that we experience in stories is really not real. And speaking of spells, I would say this modern condition is an enchantment with a capital E. And so as I've started to think about my life in that story language, it has changed so much of how I look at it. Like I look at the work I do and what I want to do with a sense of wonder and delight that I never had before I started incorporating that story language into my work. So that's my life as a conductor and how that life kind of connected to the stories I was drawn to.
What did you do after conducting?
Well, after conducting, I actually started a career in tech. It was a completely different shift, but I just kind of got interested in it and started to teach myself different sort of tech skills and made my way into that field.
Tell us about your career in technology.
Oh my goodness, such a big word. Who taught you that big word? Well, I started off as a designer and an engineer. So I taught myself product design and a little bit of engineering. I was a terrible engineer. I could like hack together projects, but I just was not very consistent with my code. It was very messy. I'm not like a systematic detail oriented person. I've always been like big picture thinker. It's something that I've learned later in life that those two skills actually don't go together naturally in the same person. But I didn't know that at the time. So I got into all kinds of stuff and started off, like I said, in design and engineering. Eventually started getting into user research, where I eventually got a job working at LinkedIn.
This one we all moved to California, Dad.
Yes, it was, Liam. This is when we all moved to California to work at LinkedIn. I moved to the Bay Area, lived in San Jose, and then San Francisco for a while.
When was I born?
Well, when we moved to California, Liam, you were only 3 months old. So you were just born 3 months before that.
What parts of your tech job did you like best?
Well, when I got to LinkedIn, two things immediately happened that I, looking back, can see started jumping out very quickly. Number one is I immediately started finding things that I thought weren't working and started championing changes. So for example, we didn't know really how to find our research insights very easily. We didn't really know what we knew about a particular subject. And I was like, this is dumb. Like, we need to figure this out. So I designed my own research database and started trying to get engineers to build it and whatnot. So right away, I saw Jesse the Disruptor once again coming out. Jesse the, wait a minute, this isn't working person come out. So once again, this thing I saw in my stories, the stories I loved, and in my career were very much in line. I wanted to look at how we did research insights and find a better way. So I loved that part. I mean, it didn't really go anywhere. I learned very quickly that the corporate tech job is not really the one that's best suited for disruption and innovation. You know, big companies exist for a reason and they have very specific ways of doing things that don't change very quickly, which, as you might remember, was very similar in some ways to my career in the orchestra world. So that is one thing I loved, even though it was challenging to do. I loved trying to disrupt and change. The other thing I really loved was I loved presenting. So I loved finding insights, once again, insights in my research that change the way people think, and then weaving kind of a performance. It's a presentation, right? But it really was like a performance in a way that could affect people and demonstrate those insights in a vibrant and impactful way. So I would obsess over my keynote decks and practice how I was going to do the presentation. Heck, if I could have had like music and other things in them, I totally would have done that. And maybe I should have. I just felt like that wasn't really allowed. But I loved that side of things. And so looking back again at my career as a conductor, Jesse the magician, Jesse the performer was still coming out. Jesse the person that wanted to weave impactful, life-changing experiences together was coming out all the time. Now, let's pause the story and zero in on this point. You might be wondering, what's the point of making these connections to the stories I love? Is it just an interesting insight? Okay, you like these magical characters like Gandalf and Harry Potter, and you feel like somehow the work you're doing is similar to the things they do in stories. Okay, interesting. Here's why it matters. Author J.R.R. Tolkien said, you know, the guy who made Lord of the Rings, "Our lives cannot have meaning until they have mythic meaning." What he means is that in myth, in those special stories that hit our gut, that hit our insides in this deep, profound way that we can't explain, we experience something there that we need in the normal, mundane parts of our life. And until that mythic something can come from the myth world into the mundane elements of our lives will not have true meaning. So when I tell you that as I think about my love of presenting at LinkedIn and how this is Jesse the magician coming out, when I realize I am doing the same thing as the Gandalfs and Harry Potters of the myth world in those moments, mythic meaning is now coming into that moment. Something is coming into that moment that gives it a depth and a substance that it does not have otherwise. So the whole point of this is, the whole point of these stories connecting myth and my life is to bring that mythic meaning into the mundane parts of my life. So back to my life. I was at LinkedIn for about 4 or 5 years. And then I left that to go to Netflix, which didn't really work out at all in some ways. In some ways, it really worked out. I was only there about 6 months and then left to really find a path of work that meant something to me.
Why did you leave Netflix?
Well, I'd been working there about 6 months and the money was really good, but man, it was the kind of quintessential golden handcuffs. I was attracted to Netflix because I was feeling this draw towards story and storytelling, but I was working on customer support and security. So I told my manager all this stuff and eventually kind of got the impression that it just wasn't working. My manager and I, for what it's worth, got along pretty well on a personal level. She was Russian and I have a deep love of the Russian people and culture. Dostoevsky is one of my favorite authors, and I speak some Russian. So we got along great there, but on a work level, it just was not a good match. So one day she came to me and she says, "Jesse, this is not working. I think we both know this. So I either need to see a plan for you to improve or we end you now." I'm like, "Wait, sorry. Did you just say end me?" "Yes, end you. Done. Gone." So I, you know, walk over to the blinds, pull them down, lock my doors, and I say, "Sorry, I must be missing something. What do you mean end me? Oh no, Jesse, sorry. When you leave Netflix, we don't kill you. We just give you a big pile of money." So I breathe a sigh of relief. Walked over to my doors, unlocked them, pulled up the blinds, and returned to the call and said, "Okay, so you're telling me I can either stay in this job that's a really bad fit, that's stressful, that's not inspiring anymore and on any level, or I could take a big pile of money." So I thought about that for about 0.7 seconds and said, "I think I'll take the money." So at that point, I decided to leave my career in tech entirely, and it propelled me into a new season.
What was it like to leave your career in tech?
Well, it was scary, really. I mean, it was leaving the safety and security in every sense, both professionally, financially, and otherwise, that I had had for about 6-7 years. And I want to point out that this moment where I got the severance package from Netflix, I could have just taken the money, put it in savings, and gone right back to another comfy tech job. But I chose not to. I chose for that moment to be the inciting event for this season of my life, which, if you don't know that term, the inciting event in a story is when the protagonist gets kicked out of their world of comfort and safety into change, transformation, and ultimately meaning. And so at this point, I said, you know what? I know this job doesn't really mean a lot to me. It's not what I want to be doing. This is not the life that I want. And so I decided to take the time off and really ask that hard, terrifying question of what do I want? What do I want in life? What kind of work is going to be an authentic expression of who I am and what I care about? And so after working with a coach for around 8 to 10 months, I started my own business that has a number of different components to it, but it all is with the goal of helping people see the magical in the mundane, helping you somehow draw the wonder and delight and meaning that you experience in stories into your life. You can see more about the different ways I do that at my website, www.jesselivingston.com.
What did you do after that?
At that point, we started to realize that the Bay Area wasn't really home for us. There were a lot of reasons, that cost of living, all the reasons why people move out of the Bay Area were some of why we did. It just didn't feel like home anymore. And most people would have just picked somewhere to live and gone and moved there. Very easy, simple, right? Well, we didn't want to do that. We didn't want to just pick somewhere that we've never experienced. And this was kind of the first time we really got to ask ourselves, where do we want to live? And to answer that question, we said, we want to experience these places. We want to travel. We want to see where we feel like is home. And so we decided through a series of decisions and conversations to sell most of what we own, get a travel trailer, a truck, and travel the country in search of a place to call home. We started doing it in December of 2021 and have been doing it ever since. And as of the recording of this episode, we've been doing it about 9 months.
What's life like on the road?
Well, I always say there are big highs and big lows. There is walking through the Grand Canyon with a live herd of elk. Yes, that really happened to us. And there's pulling into a crappy RV park at 9 at night when your kids are screaming for snacks and you're both trying to figure out which site you're at and you can't back in. And yeah, there's that. There are amazing new experiences, lots of cool people to meet and places to see and things to see. But it's also really hard. You know, you don't have the same community and friend support that you have in a normal housing situation that's permanent. But I think the big lesson that we've really come to realize is that finding a sense of belonging starts with yourself. I need to belong to myself before I'm going to be able to belong anywhere. And so for both my wife and I, it's really been a big personal journey to figure out who we are and what we want in life. All right, so Liam, are there any other questions that you want to ask me that we didn't ask yet?
What did you do when you were younger?
Well, when I was younger, I loved a lot of things. What did I do? I loved the X-Men. I liked to pretend that I was Wolverine. I remember every time I was going to watch the show, I would stand on the couch and wait for that moment that Wolverine like jumps up and swipes his claws, and I would imitate his movement with some big, huge jump off the couch. I loved pretend play. I loved video games eventually when I was allowed to play them. I was obsessed with all of the Zelda games and the Mario games. I was a total Nintendo boy. And yeah, I guess that's some of what I did when I was younger.
Did you play with Lego, Dad?
So actually, no. Sadly, I never was into Lego or really had Lego as a kid. I got into it as an adult. It wasn't until your grandma, Laura, let me build one of her Lego sets. And at that point, I was completely hooked. So the way I think about it, I finally got into Lego at just the right time when I actually had money to spend on it. All right, Liam. So what are some of the other things people should know about me?
I think that they should know about how funny your glasses are.
What do you mean they're funny?
What do you mean they're funny?
I don't know what you mean.
I don't know what you mean.
Oh, stop it.
Okay, no, stop it.
Okay, what else should people know?
Okay, what else should people know?
Oh, I hate the copycat game. This is the worst game ever.
Oh, I hate the copycat game. The worst game ever.
All right, well, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. That's a little bit about me and my journey, and hopefully you see the ways in which stories came out organically in my own story. With that, I'm Jesse Livingston, and I'll see you next time.